Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name's Dorian. I'm the CEO of Belvoir. Just a very brief sort of introduction to me, first of all. We do have a stand, by the way, in the main room. So if anybody's got any sort of, you know, really serious questions or you want to have a general chat, then I'm on the stand. My CFO, Louise, is also on the stand. I do have a plant in the room, which is Paul George, sitting at the front. So he's also on our board as a non-exec director. So you are the only plant in the room, for the record. That's my disclosure. So a very brief introduction to me. So 20 years in the property sector, 14 years at Belvoir, soon to be 15 years. There are my key skills. When I joined the business, we had 10 or 12 staff, just a handful of franchisees, and we've grown the business from a standing start sort of 23 years ago to the position that we're at today. So current market cap is 41.5 million. Louise, CFO, she's not in the room. She's upstairs working very hard, talking to people on the stand. 15 years experience on AIM. Brilliant CFO, and she's been with us for 5 years. We've both got shares in the company, and we're both working towards a three-year LTIP. We're sort of 2 years into a three-year LTIP, which is entirely aligned with investors. Our LTIP is linked to both EPS and EBITDA. So we sort of two years of the 3 years into that. So that's just a very brief intro. Before I go into the main presentation, just a few key points. At the moment, our dividend yield is just over 6%. So we're a profit-making company. We pay a dividend. We've always paid a dividend since being listed on AIM. We've had 22 years of unbroken profit and turnover growth, soon to be 23. As long as the last 2 months of the year are okay, for the record. EBITDA this year is forecast to be between 6 and 6.5 million. And FinCap do have, there is somebody from FinCap sitting in the room. You can get access to FinCap's broker's note. It's quite a detailed note. It was a new note because we changed broker to FinCap earlier this year. But if you do want a copy of that, speak to me on the stand and I can get it sent across to you. In terms of size of the business, across our network of property franchises, there are around 2,500 people. That includes staff and franchisees. On my payroll, we've got about 120 people working for the team centrally. Our revenue increased by 48% in H1 this year. We've diversified away from, we still have our core business of property franchising, but we've started to introduce complementary income streams. So we're now getting better and better at mortgages, and we have 160 mortgage advisors. 3 years ago, we had 13 mortgage advisors. Now we're up to 160. And a lot of the growth in H1 has come from the mortgage advice side. So I'll expand on that shortly. We've got a very clean, easy to understand balance sheet. And in fact, our business model is very easy to understand. So if you finish the next 20 minutes and you don't understand it, then I've fouled up. But it is an easy to understand model. Our share price has increased. I said the market cap currently is 41.5 million. It's nudged up a little bit this morning, and the share price has increased by just over 30% in the last 12 months. The share price is currently about 119, so it's 30% increase in the last 12 months. FinCap, in their note, have put a target price of 190 on the share. So, a brief explanation of the business model itself. We're a franchise business, so every one of our offices, bar two, we've got 300 physical branches across the UK. If you're based in London, we're not very well represented within London. 93% of our revenue is derived from franchisees operating outside of the M25, and just 7% of our revenue is derived from within the M25. So 300 traditional property franchise businesses with a franchisee in every one but two. We own two of these branches. They're both in Grantham, very easy to manage. And as a franchisor, It helps with credibility, it helps with systems testing and trials if you have a branch that you manage personally. So we've got two of these. One's a Newton Fallowell, one's a Belvoir. All of the rest of them are franchised. So you've got, at the centre of each one of these offices, you've got a very driven individual, 100% skin in the game. When the market sort of has its peaks and its troughs, franchisees are just continually growing their business. Franchisors generally earn their revenue. It's called management service fees. And we charge a percentage of the revenue charged by franchise. So the revenue generated by franchisees, we earn a percentage of that. So really, it's a win-win situation. Typical MSF is between 10 and 12% of gross revenue. And although we don't report on this number, our franchisees across the 300 branded offices generate around 85 million of fees from their clients. We then earn a percentage of that 85 million that goes into our listed business. And that's just one of our revenue streams. So if I quickly sort of run through the three brands. We listed in 2012, and I was the CEO at the point we listed. We listed as a letting specialist. So when we first listed on the stock market, we had about 140, 150 offices at that point in time, but it was purely residential lettings. We didn't have any involvement in estate agency and no involvement in financial services or mortgages. It was a letting specialist business, which at that point was sort of coming out of the last property crash. During the last sort of property sales crash, our business performed incredibly well, and that's simply because when the sales market crashes, you know, if you define crash, it's normally transaction numbers halving, which is exactly what happened in 2007, 2008. The number of transactions historically have been over 1.2 million, much higher than that during certain years. But during the sort of darkest years of 2007, 8 and 9, at the lowest point, transaction volumes hit around 600,000, so transactions halved. But during a property crash, a buyer doesn't want to buy a property while property prices are falling, but they only know when they've reached the bottom of the market when they look backwards, so buyers tend to hold off. And during the period that they're holding off from making that buying decision, they rent in the intervening period, so tenant demand tends to go up during a housing crash. And then, of course, you've got vendors who simply don't want to sell their property at what they perceive is a lower than market value. Vendors don't want to sell at 20 to 30% less than they paid for the property, or 20 to 30% less than they think it's worth. And the term accidental landlord was first coined in 2007, 2008, as vendors decided to rent their property out. High demand from tenants, you know, from buyers who didn't want to buy. And our business, being a letting specialist at that point, did incredibly well during the crash. So Belvoir is primarily a lettings franchise network. 90% of franchisees' revenue within Belvoir is generated from residential lettings, so traditional residential lettings. Across to Newton Fallowell, a lot of you may not have heard of Newton Fallowell. It's a strong provincial East Midlands estate agency chain. That's the other way around. So 75% of Newton Fallowell franchisees' revenue is generated from estate agency, 25% is from residential lettings. And then across to Northwood, that's a business that we acquired in 2016, exclusively franchised. That was the last large independent property franchise chain. So, you know, strategic move for us. And Northwood, identical to Belvoir, very strong residential lettings business. 90% of franchisees' revenue within Northwood is derived from residential lettings. So just letting properties on behalf of landlords, and just 10% as estate agency. So what we're looking to do long term is to help Belvoir and Northwood franchisees get better at estate agency. So across both Belvoir and Northwood, the revenue from estate agency in those two brands in H1 was up by 17%. So franchisees are getting better at estate agency. And likewise in Newton Fallowell, they're very strong sales agents, but fairly weak on the residential letting side. So we're helping the franchisees in Newton Fallowell to get better at lettings. And ultimately, residential lettings is our core skill. That's the sort of DNA of the business. So we've grown the network to 300 physical branches. In the last 3 years, we've also been growing a mortgage advice service. And MAB, Mortgage Advice Bureau, a very familiar brand, listed on AIM. The market cap is about 300 million, I think, from memory, maybe a touch less. And really, Mortgage Advice Bureau is an umbrella business that provides compliance, access to lenders, training to around 1,200 self-employed mortgage advisors. Now, we first acquired one of MAB's, what they call a key account. So a collection of these mortgage advisors operating in Barnsley was the first acquisition. And we brought in about 37 mortgage advisors, a business called Brooke, run by Michelle Brooke. We then acquired another one of MAB's key accounts at the back end of last year, which gave us, at the end of 2018, we finished the year with 123 mortgage advisors. Back in 2016, we had just 13 mortgage advisors, so we've gone from 13 to 123 at the end of last year. We issued an RNS a week ago, with an update on our financial services progress, and we're now up to 160, which is in the presentation, so quite significant progress for us. That's heavily contributed to our 48% increase in revenue in H1. We still have underlying growth within all parts of the business, but clearly the sort of move into financial services, which ultimately is simply a complementary service that franchisees are introducing to their clients. You know, the success of a single mortgage advisor stands and falls on how many leads they can get access to, how many people they can get in front of. Across the network of 300 branches, in terms of footfall, we're managing just shy of 65,000 residential properties. We have another 20,000 or 30,000 landlords who we introduce tenants to, but we don't manage properties. And then, of course, you've got tenant footfall and buyers and sellers visiting our offices all through the week, and we're simply looking to introduce financial services as a complementary service. Okay, so the markets that we're operating in, firstly, residential lettings. I'm very conscious that operating in property, I guess most of you are living in a property, you either own one or you rent one, and there's usually some quite interesting questions at the end because people have got a personal interest and an opinion on the property market. But a quick overview on the sector itself. So there are 4.5 million households in the private rented sector. That's England, not UK. So you can scale that up to just over 5 million UK-wide. 50% of landlords use an agent, which I think is a completely frightening figure, because it means that 50% of landlords just do not use an agent at all. They don't use any professional help, considering there are 150, in fact, there are more than 150 rules and regulations on how you should manage a property. And ultimately, if you get it wrong with a rented property, in the most extreme set of circumstances, a tenant could die. You know, carbon monoxide, gas safety, you know, there are some quite serious parts of property management that I think private landlords are either blissfully unaware of the 150 rules, or they simply choose to ignore them. and I imagine it's just a mix of both. And what I think will happen over time is that as regulation becomes tighter, and it is, all political parties are looking to tighten up on what they view as a relatively unregulated sector, that over time more landlords will require the services of a professional. But on the other side of that, I think letting agents need to become more professional and have qualifications and have licences, so that landlords have more confidence about using a professional agent. And all of those changes are coming too, which I'll touch on later on. In terms of share, market share, so I tend to look at our addressable market, which is 50% of the households in the PRS, based on around 5 million households. There are 13 million people renting, by the way, in the UK, quite a significant number. And our share at the moment is around 3%. The lettings to sales ratio, we've put that in there just to show that our business is very predictable. You know, we've had a great run since listing on the stock market. We've got lots of happy holders. We pay a strong dividend, and our revenue is underpinned by what we call recurring revenue. It's the lettings revenue of the business. It's not the sales revenue. So ultimately, if all of our 300 franchisees close their doors tomorrow, hopefully they won't, unless you know something I don't, Paul. If they do close the doors, tenants will continue to pay rents, and the franchisees will continue to earn revenue, and therefore we continue to earn revenue. Franchisee success isn't based on their last sales month, if that makes sense. Onto the sales market. So we sold just shy of 7,000 properties in 2018. That's likely to be around 8,000 in 2019. UK property transactions, bear in mind we put this together at our interims, so UK property transactions to June 19 were down by 2.2%. The number of transactions is kind of up and down at the minute. So the number of transactions UK-wide then fell by 10% in July and August. And then there was an uplift in September, and I suspect that at the end of this year, the number of transactions, the number of sale transactions across the whole of the UK will be 2 or 3% down compared with last year, which is the same as the year before, and that's the same as the year before, which, you know, given the fact we've had two Brexit non-stop dates and we've got a general election, I think to say the market is broadly flat or level in terms of transactions, I think the market's been holding up very well indeed. Property price inflation, it depends where you are in the country. According to the Halifax Price Index this week, house price inflation across the whole of the UK is still around 0.9%, so falling in some areas, increasing in other areas, but there is still, you know, a small amount of growth. Our business doesn't hinge on house prices, so if house prices go up, we get a marginal benefit, and if house prices go down, as I said earlier, you know, during a crash or a sort of fall in property prices, the letting side of the business tends to perform even better. Lots of sort of noise around online agents. I mean, one or two of the sort of high-profile online agents, as they call themselves, have ceased trading. The biggest one is Purple Bricks. They now have around 4% of market share in terms of transactions. But across all of the online agents, if you add up their marketing spend, they've spent hundreds of millions of pounds educating the public to such an extent. I think everybody's aware that you can sell your house for less than £1,000 fixed fee. You know, you can't put Freeview on without seeing three of these adverts in, you know, in 10 minutes. But interestingly, after all of that market, the spend on marketing, all of the online agents collectively have only taken 7% of market share, which means that 93 people out of 100 are still choosing to use a local agent with a local team of people around them. On the estate agency side, our fees for selling properties, our average fee is around £2,000 on a no-sale, no-fee basis, so we don't charge anything unless we successfully sell a property for a vendor. So in terms of the comparison between our fees and an online agent's fees, the differential is really small. If you're comparing Foxton's average sales fee versus Purple Bricks' fee, the differential is much bigger. You know, so I think Purple Bricks will clearly gain ground in some areas, but not so much in other areas. But yeah, that's the stat. Okay, so sort of future-wise, what are we looking to do as a business? We are looking to continue the rollout of financial services as a complementary income stream. We're at 160 mortgage advisors now, and a year ago, you know, people were saying to me, how far do you think you can take this? I actually wouldn't have forecast 160. I think I've been saying for the last few months, you know, 140, 150 by year end would have been a really good result. So we're sort of ahead of our sort of forecast on financial services. Where do we think we can take this? If we continue growth at the same rate, then there's no reason why we can't reach 200 mortgage advisors next year. There will be a ceiling to that because we have 300 offices, and ideally we're looking to have a mortgage advisor either within each branch or pretty close to each branch, maybe covering two or three outlets if the outlets are particularly small ones. So yeah, we see that as a significant area of growth. And also the as far as the new mortgage advisors that have joined us this year, we don't see any upside from a new mortgage advisor for, you know, 3 to 9 months. It takes the mortgage advisor time to build a base of clients, it takes them time to write mortgages for these clients, and then it takes some time for the for the property or the mortgage to complete. Typically within the mortgage advisor's pipeline, the fall-through rate is generally quite low, sort of sub 10%, whereas an estate agents generally say that 25% of all transactions will fall through. Why it's much lower on the mortgage side is that once you've done a mortgage with a mortgage advisor or got it set up, even if you lose the house that you're buying, you will probably continue to buy another property through another agent, and you'll take that mortgage with you. It's all set up and you've paid fees. So the fall-through rate is much, much lower. I touched on professionalisation of the sector. there was a report produced by Lord Best in July of this year called the ROPA report, R-O-P-A, it stands for Regulation of Property Agents. And Lord Best headed a working group with a view to putting together a set of recommendations as to how the sector, the entire property sector, should be regulated over the next 3 to 5 years. Now, it's quite dull. It's a 53-page document. Page one is fairly interesting if you're into property. And in a nutshell, the report says things like estate agents, letting agents, anybody working in the property sector should have a licence to operate. So they should have an individual licence. The firm they're working for should also have a licence. And the logic behind that is that if, let's say, one of our 2,000 staff or franchisees behave badly, do something wrong, they should lose their individual licence, but clearly the firm shouldn't lose its licence. That's covered within the ROPA report. The report also recommends that anybody working in property performing certain duties on the front line should have a qualification, and I wholeheartedly agree. You know, in many cases we're handling an individual's most valuable asset, so we should have a qualification, we should have gone through an element of training. And you know, if you look at the Australian model, you can't set up an estate or letting agency business without working in the sector for 2 years. You've got to have a licence, you've got to be professional, and that's been lacking in the lettings and estate agency sector up until now. Lord Best hasn't given a timescale for this, but he's sort of hinting that 2 to 3 years is a reasonable timescale. The ROPA report also contains recommendation for a brand new regulator. So at the minute, there isn't a regulator of property in the UK. There are a number of them. You've got RICS, Chartered Surveyors, you've got ALA, Lettings, you've got NAA, Estate Agency, two of which are trade bodies that don't exist for the benefit of the client as such. But in the report, it says, look, property needs to have its own regulator, a little bit like the FCA. And a few other recommendations are in the report along a similar line. Now, we're very supportive of all of the recommendations in the ROPA report, and I was one of the people feeding into that report. I was in a separate working group to help both ALA and NEA. Really, we just recommendations that went into the report. We don't do that selflessly. You know, if this regulation happens in the next 2 to 3 years, more clients will use professional agents. So we're massively behind these changes, and it's about time. And there is huge political will to see this happen. The sector is consolidating. So we're still a sector dominated by small independent agents. There are around 20,000 individual letting and estate agencies dotted around high streets. The vast majority of those are still independently owned, single office operators. Now, the sector is starting to consolidate. So over the last 4 years, we've helped franchisees to buy around 90 of these individual units. We're helping franchisees with the expertise they need to find one of these competitors. We're helping them with the operational expertise, and we're also helping them with funding to buy these competitors. So far this year, we've helped franchisees buy in just shy of 6 million of additional revenue by means of these small acquisitions. Last year it was 6.9 million, and the benefit to us as a business is that we get our 10% management service fee recurring on that extra revenue, and that's for the life of the client. It doesn't sort of start 1 year and end the next year. You know, we get that revenue. So we're looking to expand that further. Different to other property franchisors, we've got an in-house team handling acquisitions on behalf of our franchisees. We've got 4 people in the team. They're very good, very experienced, and as I say, that's performing particularly well this year. Large corporate networks, and I'll give you an example. LSL, another listed company, announced at the start of this year they were looking to close between 30 to 40% of their network. I'm not sure exactly where they are with these closures, but they're certainly partway through that programme. We're sort of going in the opposite direction. And, you know, generally one of the questions I have at the end of one of these talks is, you know, what makes you different from the corporate networks, Foxtons, Countrywide, LSL? You know, one of the most obvious differences is that we've got a franchisee sitting inside this business. They're self-employed. You know, they want to put their kids through university. They want to better themselves every year. These are really driven individuals. And, you know, if you compare that to a corporate estate agency network, when a branch manager finds things tough. You know, their area manager's giving them a hard time for not hitting their numbers. They just leave. You know, they leave and they get a job somewhere else. You know, a franchisee has a long lease on commercial premises, so they've put a huge amount of investment into their business to get it to the point they're at. And they're immensely committed, far more committed than a branch manager. And, you know, a branch manager versus a franchisee, I'd say in all franchise concepts, the commonality is that the franchisee generally will outperform a branch manager in all respects. So we've got set to consolidation. Move on to the next one. So why invest? I've got 150 good reasons why you should invest, but I've sort of condensed that into just a small number. You know, I said at the beginning that we've had 22 years of unbroken profit and turnover growth. We do harness the entrepreneurial essence of a franchisee. Interestingly, our very first franchisee who joined us, which was 23 years ago, a guy in Elgin, sort of in north of Scotland, he's still with us. He's kind of getting older, or old, one or the other, but he's still going strong, he's still growing his business. We have a very low churn rate in terms of franchisees, and that's not because of necessarily because of the strength of the management team or the model. That's down to the style of operating means that once a franchisee is managing 200 to 300 properties, they've got that recurring revenue every single month. There's no reason for them to exit. You know, if they have a bad couple of months, the revenue still comes in. So franchisees are very sticky. Strong history of financial growth, as you've said, and EPS has more than doubled since 2014. Low risk in terms of 63% of our gross profit is derived from the lettings side of the business. Dividend policy, dividend yield is already just over 6%. The H2 dividend will be higher than the H1 dividend. So it was 3.4 in H1, it'll be 4 in H2. And we have already said that to investors, and we sort of committed to a progressive dividend policy, a modestly progressive dividend policy going forward. And dividend cover, In H2 it'll be 1.8. In H1 it was two times cover because the dividend was slightly less, and you know, strong future growth strategy completely underpinned by the franchise network. Should we do Q&A?
So if I'm interested in setting up a business in sales or lettings, why would I want to give you some of my money?
Well, interestingly, on day one you wouldn't have any because it's a startup generally. So interesting. My point being. Is that franchisees are typically not from the property sector. So that's sort of warm. So they don't generally come with experience. That's been our choice of operating, mainly because if someone joins us and they've got 10 years experience in property, they're less likely to want to follow a franchise system because they think they know how to do it and they think that they know best. And you know, ultimately, franchising is about following a system and following the guidance given by the franchisor and the support team. So typically, franchisees don't have any experience. You know, I remember sort of 10 or 15 years ago, people saying to me, isn't that a weakness in the business story? And people have got no experience. It's actually proved to be a strength in franchising. We've said this for such a long time. And now, you know, it has definitely been bearing fruit. So generally, people join with no experience. So we provide initial training, ongoing training, guidance with every element of legislation, and as it changes, we provide guidance on that. Document templates, document suites, insurances like PI, for instance, is a group policy. So we help franchisees to benefit from the scale of the wider business. Discounts with suppliers, branding, marketing, website. You know, even to host for a small independent agent now, to host a decent website that's user-friendly, hack-proof, and that kind of stands up throughout the year is an expense. You know, franchisees don't pay us anything extra for that. That's part of. We do, so yeah, and that's does that answer your question, by the way?
Yes,
pretty much. So yes. So it's almost imagine that
if I've done this for a few years, I'm less likely to come to you, but I still might benefit.
But you're still exactly right. So we, you know, more recently we are having more people approach us to say, can I convert to your brand or can I join, you know, with experience?
Oh yeah. Someone's already got older and wants to become a franchisee.
Yeah.
So there's no cash transaction because
Correct. So they could always sort of rebrand
it's a dead nil, that is it. They acquire your system and
If they wanted to
start paying your fees.
It's sort of they start paying fees, yes, spot on. So
and got the benefit from your marketing.
Yes, exactly right. So you know, both can happen. So it's really helped with HR, everything that someone needs to run a business. We provide the expertise. The franchisees don't have to use everything, but the system's there if they want to, definitely.
Looking 3 to 5 years ahead, do you have a plan or a target in your own mind as to how you're going to grow the various brands that you control? And have you got any further additional complementary streams of income that you're thinking of developing?
Yeah, no, good question. I mean, in my mind, so my personal plan is that I want to see the business with a market cap of around 100 million. You know, we're working hard to make progress every single year. I've got a hugely committed management team. And you know, I've had one or two investors say to me this morning, but is the business contingent on you, Dorian? You know, are you going to leave or something? And actually, what we've done since Float, we've retained MDs in all of these brands. So we've got Michelle Brook, who built Brook Financial. Mark Newton, who grew Newton Fallowell from nothing, is still the MD of Newton Fallowell. We've got an MD of Northwood, and we have a sort of de facto MD of Balfour itself. And that kind of links into you know, your point about growth going forward. We've got the right humans in the right spots who are motivated to grow all of these businesses going forward. So our task actually becomes easier has become easier over the last 2 or 3 years. And the financial services, I think will be, you know, a significant area for growth. You know, we're already proving that it is if you look at the H1 stats. We're sort of pushing footprint, which we'll do partially organically and part by acquisition. I would be surprised if we did another mortgage acquisition, only because we've already got the base template, we've got the experience, we've got the skill, and we've got really strong organic growth on the mortgage side. So there's no real reason, unless it was highly strategic, to go after another sort of, to acquire another mortgage business. There's no reason why we can't sort of have growth on all counts. What was the second part of the question? Sorry, it was...
Additional services,
got it. Yeah, I mean, so one of the areas, so financial services, you know, I think as a management team, we were concerned before we rolled out financial services, you know, about the reception from franchisees. They absolutely love it and they're excited about it. And in fact, we've got franchisees where you've got maybe 2 or 3 franchisees in one business, you know, brothers working together, husband and wife teams. We've got a number of franchisees now training to become mortgage advisors. So they like it that much. They want to put a partner through the program. So they absolutely love it. And there are some other areas that we're very interested in. Commercial property is another one. You know, a 3 years ago, I sort of went through an exercise where I looked at all of these online models, and I had meetings with a number of sort of founders of the online estate agency models, with a view to either partnering with someone, you know, white label arrangement, just to investigate a partnership. And the conclusion that I drew at the end of that sort of few months of meetings was that they want what I've got, which is boots on the ground, property management expertise, and humans in local areas who can do things, whether it's property management, whether it's house visits, whether it's inventories, whether it's viewings, whatever it might be in property. And kind of I wanted what they had at the time, which was the, you know, the great customer-friendly, very efficient technology platform. So we didn't end up partnering with any of these businesses. And you know, over time, over the next few years, we've asked our franchisees to jump onto a common operating system, and we're sort of halfway through a rollout to the whole of our network. So to me, that's kind of step one, and then step two is to develop our consumer-facing platform, which is something that we're very keen to do over the next 2 to 3 years. So, yeah. So commercial property, block management, and that's probably the two main ones. Yeah. Yeah.
Two questions, if I may.
Certainly.
Typically, what sort of P's are you paying for businesses that you're acquiring, and how are you financing that? And the second one is, what are the 2, maximum 3, biggest potential threats to you achieving your 100 million market cap?
Okay, so on the multiples, I think it's probably just worth pointing out there are 2 different types of acquisition that we do. So, I mean, the first one I've mentioned, and that's where we help a franchisee to acquire a small lettings business or a sales business. And franchisees, and bear in mind, we're helping them fund this. We're helping them do the DD with the funding. And typically, a franchisee is paying 1x turnover. So historically, with lettings businesses and sales businesses, they're normally valued on a multiple of turnover. They're small businesses. I guess the profit is more more difficult to identify in a, you know, in a small independent business. But when you look at the profit in these independents, it's normally, it normally ends up being 2 to 3 times multiple of profit or 1 times turnover. That's the franchisee acquisition. So if I park that for a second, then if you look at the historic deals that we've done, so Newton Fallowell, we've done a fair few of them, Newton Fallowell, Brook, Northwood being another. The most expensive was Northwood. That was at sort of an 8x multiple, but that was a strategic move. It ended up being an 8x multiple because it was subject to a 2-year earn-out for a start. So we helped, you know, to a certain extent, we helped the sellers to develop the profit during that period. But for us, it meant that we can increase the footprint significantly. It means that we can do more acquisitions. And in fact, the lion's share of franchisee acquisitions this year are being done by Northwood franchisees, not by Belvoir franchisees. That shows that, you know, it was a really good move for us to make. Newton Fallowell was a 6x multiple, if I'm not mistaken, and Brook was about the same sort of level. However, about 6, yeah. However, what I would say is, I mean, we're being offered opportunities all of the time because the sector is consolidating, and you know, all of the franchise businesses are performing particularly well, so we are getting offered these businesses, and I imagine the multiple will push down to more like 3 to 4 times, I imagine, for any future deals that happen. Yeah, and that's simply because there are more opportunities to choose from. All of the three that I mentioned, the three main ones, were strategic for us. You know, they were one-offs. Yeah. Do you want the threats, by the way? The main threats.
Yeah, what are the two main threats you're reaching at 100 million market cap?
Do you know, I think, I mean, it'll be part by acquisition and part organic growth. So we neither one will sort of get us there. And I don't really, I'm not being blasé about this, but we're so experienced at doing what we're doing. You know, we're very passionate about property and franchising. I don't worry about either. So whatever happens in the market, we've already traded through difficult conditions and perform very well. You know, unless the wheel fell off both sectors for some reason, you know, mortgage companies stopped giving mortgages and the government repossessed all property, you know, unless there's a catastrophic event, then I can't see that our performance will be impacted. And I think it's finding the right opportunity on maybe the acquisition side to just help give us that lift to get us above 50 million. You know, we I guess there are shareholders and institutions who will invest further if we get just above that 50 million point. And a re-rating of the sector would help. You know, we're sort of the rating of the sector at the minute, it's almost like it's distressed. There was nothing distressed about our business, which can be quite frustrating. Mm.
Dorian, I'm afraid we've run out of time.
That's okay.
Thank you very much indeed.
If you've got any more questions, then I'm upstairs.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.